Deutsche Welle. Africa Link.
And in this edition of Africa Link, the tough job of picking Ebola dead bodies.
It's a risky job, actually, but they are doing it for the sake of the general good of Liberia.
Rights watchdog Amnesty International accuses Nigeria's security forces of torture.
Some of them, as an example, the most gruesome ones include extracting nails using various tools, basically a very painful exercise.
We shall also bring you the government's reaction to that damning report. Plus, our learning by ear drama Crossroads Generation continues. Stay tuned for the next 25 minutes with me, Crispin Mokideu, in Bonn, Germany.
Top story.
The upward epidemic trend continues. That's the message from the World Health Organization as the death toll from the Ebola virus climbed to over 2,600. Meanwhile, the German branch of Doctors Without Borders, MSF, has criticized Berlin's support in the fight against Ebola as inadequate. Florian Westphal is the general director of MSF in Germany. He explained to me the reasons behind their discontent.
Well, until now, the reaction by the German government has been extremely limited and clearly insufficient, despite the fact that Doctors Without Borders and many others have been pointing at the severity of the Ebola crisis and the fact that it's deteriorating rapidly. And that's been the case for several weeks. We've pointed this out to them. Very little has happened. For now, we have a couple of promises and announcements, but we see no concrete action on the ground where it's urgently needed.
Berlin has said that it is providing an extra 5 million euros and they're sending military planes to distribute medical supplies. There's a promise to build these isolation camps.
Well, there's a number of announcements at the moment. The problem is very often they're not necessarily always very official or clear. Funding they have provided, that is true, but at this point in time, as we've been saying for a number of weeks now, it's not money that is missing, it is people on the ground, experts on the ground that can help those who are infected in Guinea, Liberia and Sierra Leone. The plan in particular of the German government, the announcement to deploy a hospital to Liberia without sending the required staff to go with it, while a hospital without staff is not going to make much of a difference on the ground.
Well, what I understood is that they were going to also train or to build the capacity on the ground so that they can take over running of the clinic.
A training and capacity building of local health workers is an important element in the medium to long term. The problem is that right now what we need is people who are there on the ground, who are equipped and trained already to be able to look after patients. What the estimate is that Monrovia alone needs more than 1,000 beds for treatment. And what Germany is at the moment talking about is 50 beds, but without people who can deliver the actual treatment. Training is a good approach, but if it takes several weeks, then within those several weeks, many more people will die because there's been no treatment available for them.
Why do you think the government is reluctant to send its own medical team to the countries affected by the Ebola virus?
It's difficult for me to, in a way, answer that on behalf of the German government. I mean, our feeling has certainly been that we would have expected more political will, more readiness to help. And yes, we know that helping these kind of contexts also means taking risks. But I think this situation is so exceptional in terms of its severity, in terms of its dramatic impact it has on the three countries and their people, that everyone who has the means to help, especially rich and wealthy states like Germany, should really be ready to assume these risks and help whichever way they can.
Florian Westphal, General Director, Doctors Without Borders in Germany. As the UN Security Council gathered on Thursday for an emergency Ebola meeting, a small group of men with biohazard suits gather in Liberia. Their task is to pick dead bodies which succumbed to the Ebola virus. As Julius Kanuba reports, in some instances, they collect up to 30 bodies in a day.
The Ebola burial team is today at the home of a family that just lost three of its members to Ebola, a little boy aged 7 and two elderly women, 9 men dressed in white biohazard suits, with one carrying a tin containing this infectant spirit on his back, have come to collect their bodies. These men are part of the Ebola burial team. Their job is not to console the grieving family, but to undertake the tricky task of collecting the victims of Ebola. Before heading into the home of the victims, they spray the entire area. Then they collect and zip each of the victims into a double set of body bag. Afterwards, four men take the body into a waiting truck. Mike Kavayan is the head of this burial team.
I'm not happy carrying dead bodies every day. It's not a good job, and it's not my job either, because I'm not a mortician.
When I asked him to describe the job of picking up victims of Ebola, Mike put up a smile, reminding me of what I just saw when they collected the three bodies.
I can tell you this job that we're doing is a case we haven't dealt with before. This is the first time in history. It is only God that is carrying me through along with the team and the police officers that join us. We are just sacrificing ourselves to join the risk. This is a battle we are on.
Mike, an environmental health practitioner with Liberia's health ministry, and his team have been working since the outbreak of Ebola in Liberia late March. Their grim task also attracts community dwellers and passers-by who stand for the longest to watch the Ebola burial team perform their job. For Dax Gray, a resident of Monrovia, seeing for the first time with his own eyes the Ebola burial team, increased his awareness of the virus.
I only came to really see what was really going on, you know, to believe that Ebola is real.
O'Neill Bestman, a communication officer of the Liberia National Red Cross, which is managing the collection of Ebola victims in partnership with Liberia's health ministry, says the work of the burial team is critical to containing the virus.
And it's a risky job, actually, but they are doing it for the sake of the general good of Liberia. Because if the body overstays in the community, it increases the risk of transmission. Because as long as the body overstays, other people want to come around. You know our tradition, our culture, people want to sympathize with people who are in desperate situation or they are in distress. I think the bold step to break the chain of transmission is timely picking up of the bodies, and which, of course, we, the Red Cross, we are very committed to doing that.
Over 50 men are currently involved in the collection of Ebola dead bodies across Liberia. The burial team has generated positive reactions among young unemployed Liberians who also want to be part of it.
Julius Kanuba in Monrovia.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
Accusations and counter-accusations. Let's begin with the latter. Nigeria's Information Minister, Labaran Maku, has strongly rejected a report by Amnesty International.
Amnesty International has consistently, in the course of this insurgency, sought to tarnish the image of Nigeria, to tarnish the image of our armed forces. It has always brought up cooked-up reports concerning the work the Nigerian armed forces are doing.
The Nigerian Information Minister was reacting to a report by Amnesty which accused security forces of using torture. Isaac Mugabe with this report by Stephanie Dockstein.
According to Amnesty International, torture has become so institutionalized that many police stations have an informal officer in charge of torture, or ROSI torture. Amnesty International's Director for Africa, Netsanet Belai, says in a bid to extract confessions and detainees, Nigeria's security organs use some of the most gruesome techniques.
We've seen various forms of torture being used in Nigeria. The most gruesome ones include nail extraction. It also includes electric shocks and etc. We've also documented sexual violence as a form of torture, particularly on women and sex workers.
But Abdul Jalil Desian, Nigeria's Minister for Police Affairs, denied the allegations and accused Amnesty International of always coming up with damaging reports at the time when the country is involved with fighting insurgents in the northeastern part of the country.
Amnesty International has consistently, in the course of this insurgency, sought to tarnish the image of Nigeria. It has always brought up cooked-up reports, you know, concerning the work the Nigerian armed forces are doing. For example, we recall that in the course of the Chibok abduction, they claimed that the army had received reports days before. They didn't act on it. All they wanted to do was to set the public against the Nigerian security forces, which is what they have consistently done.
However, torture victims have a different story to tell. One of them is a 33-year-old Onyekachi. He explains what he went through at the hands of security agents.
My both hands were tied to the back together with my legs. I was beaten with iron bars, but the most painful one was the hanging. I was hung for 1 hour.
According to Amnesty International, up to 10,000 people have been arrested in the military operations against Boko Haram, and that people can disappear behind bars for years.
That report by Stephanie Dockstein was presented by Isaac Mugabe. Only in his hometown is a prophet not without honor. German-born journalist and author Ruth Weiss may not be well known in her native Germany, but in Africa, the 90-year-old is arguably the most well-known German journalist, having interviewed African legends such as Nelson Mandela. Assumpta Latus with this report by Klaus Stecker.
My very first question, those were the words with which Ruth Weiss began her numerous interviews. Music legend Miriam Makeba, Literature Nobel Prize laureate Nadine Goldemar, Ruth Weiss met them all. She went to school with Henry Kissinger in the German city of Fürth. She met Nelson Mandela over a bowl of soup in the 1960s and had a chat with Robert Mugabe in his garden.
I met many of these future leaders when they were still part of the resistance struggle. That gave me the chance to build up a different kind of relationship with them. We were almost on first name terms. I was just lucky.
In hindsight, it was also luck that Weiss' father lost his job in Germany just as the Nazis took power in 1933. Being Jewish, he was unable to find further employment. The family left Germany 3 years later and emigrated to South Africa's Cape of Good Hope. At the age of 12, Ruth became a South African citizen. In South Africa's Jewish society, she met leftists and liberal intellectuals, including her husband, journalist Hans Weiss, and writer Nadine Goldemar. While Goldemar discussed politics and literature with men, she only befriended the quiet, almost submissive Ruth much later. Weiss was once asked whether she and Goldemar ever discussed literature or their own works.
I was once asked whether we talked about literature, about her books. I said, never. It was a typical friendship between two women, and it lasted for decades.
Goldemar later realized how she had underestimated her shy friend. In the meantime, Ruth Weiss published short stories and later went on to write novels, thrillers, and children's books. While her husband Hans advised her against studying law, he allowed her to take up a career in journalism. Her first reporting trip took her to Tanzania, or Tanganyika as it was called at the time.
I didn't know what I was capable of. I was terrified and I had to read a lot to prepare myself for the trip. I had no clue about what was going on in Tanzania.
Tanzania war für mich kein Begriff.
Nevertheless, Weiss excelled in her journalistic ambitions and she soon left her dominating husband. She became very critical of apartheid and soon found herself blacklisted by the regime. She worked for the Financial Times and other renowned papers and moved to Harare and Lusaka.
That report was written by Klaus Stecker. Now to some action. Here is Learning by Ear with the Crossroads Generation.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello again and welcome to Crossroads Generation, a radio drama about a group of African teenagers, their families and the problems they have to deal with.
We're standing at the crossroads, we're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation, our future stands today.
We are on the second season called Facing the Consequences, and we are about to start episode number 22. Previously, Dan returned to his school Bongo Academy after temporary suspension, and he found two girls waiting for him there.
Hi, Dan.
Hi, Mercy.
Hi, Dan.
Anita? What are you doing here?
Mercy's carrying Dan's child, and the other girl, Anita, was his girlfriend back in Laboria. She's now an exchange student at Bongo Academy, and girls aren't Dan's only problem. His father, Kanyama, has been arrested because he forced children to work in his mines. Among them were Kadu and Banda, Mercy's younger twin brothers, who escaped and are now safely back home. Unlike their father, Msoto, who's been held at the police station for a robbery he didn't commit. The wealthy local politician, Mukaraba, was behind that.
I put you in here to get you out of the way, but so I could enjoy life with my wife and our baby. Our baby. But
Mukaraba, you can't do this.
So a lot is going on in Mercy's family. Her mother, Lulu, has found out that Msoto sold her newborn baby daughter to Mukaraba right after she gave birth to her. Now she's desperately fighting to get her back. We join Lulu at the police station as we start this episode called What Goes Around, Comes Around.
Officer Mnene, I am here for my baby. I want to see my little girl.
Oh no, here she goes again. Lulu Msoto, I've already told you that the child is with social services.
What is this social services you keep telling me about? Where is it?
Social services look after children who have no parents or whose parents are unknown.
My child has a parent. Me. That's why I keep coming here. Please tell me where this social services place is so that I can go and see my little girl.
I told you before. I can't do that, madam.
Why not? She's my daughter and I want her back.
I've told you. This case is still being processed.
Don't tell me about processing, officer. I am sick and tired of hearing that word from you. You've been telling me this for months now. I just want to see my little
girl. Madam, please keep your voice down. My new boss will hear you, and I'm sure she won't be amused.
Don't tell me to keep my voice down. In fact, I want to talk to your boss, seeing as you can't help
me. I'm warning you. If you keep shouting out here, we'll arrest you and lock you up.
Arrest me then.
Madam.
Go on, put me in jail for wanting to see a child I carried in my own womb for 9 months.
Madam.
Go on, I said arrest
Madam.
Me.
Hey, just
arrest
come. I
me.
Said you
what
calm
are you
down.
Waiting for?
Just what is all come. This commotion about, officer? What is going on in here?
Don't worry, Madam Inspector Mary. Everything is under control.
I don't think so. Madam, what is the problem?
Madam. I've been coming here for months now.
Madam Inspector, I think this woman is crazy. Let me just handle her.
Officer, I wasn't talking to you. Please come to my office, madam.
You heard the inspector. Come on, let's go to our office.
Officer, you remain here. I will speak to the lady in private.
But madam, I understand the case.
Officer, that is an order.
Yes, madam.
Please, follow me, madam.
Thank you.
My brother, I'm so happy you're back from hospital.
Me too, Kadu.
Banda, and what will happen to Kanyama and our Aunt Lena now they have been arrested?
I don't know. Hey, here comes Mercy. Let's ask her. Mercy?
Yes, Banda?
What happens when somebody is arrested?
It means that he or she is caught by the police and taken to court. And if the judges decide the person is guilty, he's punished.
Oh, that's good.
Why do you want to know?
Because Aunt Elena and that man Kanyama were arrested in Laboria.
That's right. They were arrested for making you and other little children work in the mines. It's called child labor.
Does it mean they'll arrest Mom too?
No, why?
Because she makes us go to the shops and clean our dishes after eating.
I don't want Mom to be arrested.
Me neither.
Don't worry, Mom won't be arrested. Helping out in the house is not child labor. Did you take your medicine, Banda?
Yes, I did. Dr. Roberts said that if I don't, my cough will come back.
That's right. You have to take TB medicine for as long as the doctor says. And you must finish the whole course of medicine. Because even if you feel well, it doesn't mean you're fully recovered. Your body is still fighting the disease.
Yes, I know.
Have a seat, madam. My name is Inspector Mary, and I was posted here just recently. What's your name again?
I am Lulu Msoto.
Msoto? Isn't your husband being held here in our police station? He's a robbery suspect, isn't he?
Yes, he is. But I'm not here because of him.
I don't understand. Why are you here then?
Almost a year ago, I gave birth to a baby girl. My husband took her away and sold her to a local politician. I reported it as soon as I found out where she was, but...
Wait a minute. You mean to tell me a man has sold his own child? That's illegal adoption. It's a crime.
I didn't think it was right either. But I only found out where my daughter was after my husband was arrested.
And where was she?
At the local councillor's place, Mukaraba.
Mukaraba.
Yes. I came here and reported it. And ever since then, the officer just keeps telling me the case is being processed.
Police procedures do take time.
But it's been several months now.
Is that so? Let me just check on the file. There don't seem to be a file for this case. That is strange. I don't know what's going on here, Lulu, but I promise you I will try and resolve this. But I am afraid I'll have to ask you to be patient for a little longer.
Man, it's so lonely here without no one to talk to. Not even Biko speaks to me anymore, although he used to be my best friend. What a mess. But I think Anita will. I bet she's still in love with me, even if she denies it. She can't resist Dan Kanyama. I hope she's in her room.
Hello? Who's that? Come out wherever you are, or I'll scream and call the watchman.
Shh. Anita, don't scream. It's me, Dan.
Dan?
Yes.
What are you doing sneaking around outside my window at night?
Shh, not so loud, Anita. Can I come in, please?
Hell no. What do you want, Dan?
Anita, I need you back in my life.
What? Dan, are you out of your mind?
Anita, I'm so sorry about what happened with Mercy. I really regret it. She meant nothing to me.
Dan, you're disgusting. The least you could do is stand by your actions. And besides, what on earth makes you think I'd just come running straight back to you after everything you've done?
I mean, you and I come from the same country. We should stick together.
Dan, I loved you. I fought to get onto the exchange program trip so I could come here and be with you. If I'd known you were busy chasing after other girls, I would have stayed in Laboria, even with the war going on. Stay out of my life. I don't ever want to talk to you again.
Anita, please.
Go away, Dan.
Anita, wait. I need some money.
Ah, I see. That's what this is all about. Just leave, Dan. I hope the watchman catches you.
So Dan's been thrown out by Anita, his former girlfriend. And wait a minute. Just a few months ago, he was saying the exact same things to Mercy, wasn't he? In her video diary, Anita talks about how she feels about that nocturnal visit from her ex-boyfriend and about what else is bothering her. Just log on to dw.de/LBE to watch her latest video recording. As always, you can also share your comments on what you just heard on our Facebook page. Tune in next time, and meanwhile, take care.
And now a quick summary of our main stories. The Ebola death toll has reached over 2,600, according to the WHO. And the Nigerian government has rejected torture allegations in a report by Amnesty International. And though we've come to the end of the show, your comments and suggestions are always welcome. Simply write an SMS to +491609575910 and email to feedback.africa@dw.de. I'm Crispin Mwakideu, and bye for now.